The following is a paid commercial program from the Ulster County Department of Health. This is the Healthy Ulster Radio Show, a weekly talk show exploring community health and sustainability with guests representing a broad spectrum of community partners working to make Ulster County the healthiest in New York State. This program is a community affairs presentation of the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health.
Good morning and welcome to Healthy Ulster Radio. My name is Vincent Martell. I'm Director of Community Health Relations for the Ulster County Department of Health and Mental Health. And today we're going to be talking about eating disorders, and our very special guest is Elise Simon. Elise is a registered dietitian nutritionist in private practice since 1998. She is also the dietitian on staff at Bard College. She works with people who have eating disorders, body image issues, food allergies, vegan, vegetarian diets, and insulin resistance. Elise has a degree from Vassar University of Natural Medicine, which gives her work an alternative flavor. Elise works to facilitate change and promote healthy attitudes towards food and body image. Welcome, Elise. It's nice to have you.
Thanks, Vincent, so much for inviting me.
Before we dig into the subject matter, can you just give our listeners an idea of how one becomes a registered dietitian and nutritionist and what that designation means?
Sure. So anybody can be a nutritionist. You can hang out your shingle today and be a nutritionist. To be a registered dietitian, you have to have a bachelor's of science degree and then do an internship. So I spent a year working in hospitals and clinics, different facilities to get an idea of what the actual practice looks like. My education, as you said, is a little different because I do have a background in natural medicine using food as a way to approach healing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I know that I'm somewhat familiar with Vassar University of Natural Medicine. That's a naturopathic, medical school, and pretty rigorous from what I understand. And so tell us, how does your practice or your particular perspective on the work differ from others who might be in the field, or how is it similar?
I think as a dietitian, and I will sometimes use the words dietitian, nutritionist interchangeably, but as a dietitian, I'm an eating disorder specialist. So I don't believe that there are any bad foods. So a lot of nutritionists, dietitians, you can go in and have a meeting with them once or twice and get a piece of paper. Let's say someone's newly diabetic and they go to their doctor and they get a handout of all the foods not to eat. And they do that for 5 or 6 days. And then they find it doesn't work. It's not sustainable. So that's when I usually get those people. They would come to me because I believe in, we have to do small incremental changes and things that are sustainable in our life. So I don't usually hand out pieces of paper on here's what to eat, here's what not to eat.
Is it not sustainable because it's just too demanding for the individual to change his or her eating habits, and just like that?
Exactly. Think about if someone told you to change all of your eating habits tomorrow. You know, how difficult, because our eating habits are based on so many things. One, there's economics, what we can afford. There's culture about what we're used to. And there's time. For so many people, there's a time factor. They might stop off at some fast food place every day for breakfast and then order out for lunch if they're at work, which might not be sustainable if you're looking for healthy options. I also think that change is based on what we're capable of doing. So we bring in the word stress about what are we capable of doing? Can I, if I'm not used to cooking dinner ever and I eat out every night, it's not feasible that if I have hypertension, high blood pressure, if I need to lower my sodium, if I'm going to cook every single night, that's probably not going to happen.
Right. So is your approach then, as you said, small incremental change? So just helping the client to understand how some small steps can potentially lead to bigger change. Is that the idea?
Yes, it's about small changes. And I think it's also about helping people find the motivation. Mm-hmm. I had a client today talk about, well, I really want all of that Halloween candy. you know, it's sitting in the house. I didn't get as many people. I really want all that Halloween candy. And I said, what part of you wants that? You know, if we think about, well, her mouth certainly wants it. And the stressed out part of her where the candy is really calming and comforting, that part of her wants it. But what about what I call the wise woman voice? Does the voice that says, you know, you are overweight, you do have diabetes, is this really what you want to do? That part of her, that intellect and that wise woman voice doesn't exactly want all of the candy that her mouth wants. So I wouldn't say don't have any candy. I might say, well, if part of you wants it, how much do you think you need? Do you need two pieces?
Right. So yeah. Kind of reframing the internal debate a bit. So Elise, for our listeners' benefit, can you tell us really what an eating disorder is and what the different types of eating disorders are? Can you give us a brief overview of that?
Sure. So many things today we think about on the spectrum. And so eating disorders or disordered eating, I believe, is also on the spectrum. The eating disorders are things like anorexia, where people don't eat enough to sustain their body's needs, or bulimia, where people eat and then throw up. They purge, they binge and they purge. Or a binge eating disorder, where people eat a lot of food in a frenetic, chaotic way at one time. I think that's less important as thinking about disordered eating, which I would describe it as, if we're thinking about what we're going to eat, where we're going to eat, how much we're going to eat, who we're going to eat with, and why we're going to eat more than 30% of our day, that's disordered. Mm-hmm. We might think about, I'm bringing this for lunch, and I'm going to have that for dinner. And then we go on with the rest of our day. Uh-huh. But if we're thinking about it, if it's taking up other time in our brain that could be devoted to thinking about other parts of life, that's disordered eating. There's also part that what makes an eating disorder is the thoughts about how my body is not okay. That even for someone with anorexia, they often think they are fat or overweight, when that's not the case. But with eating disorders and disordered eating, regardless of what people eat, sometimes there's that feeling of what I eat and what I weigh really is a comment about my worth.
Interesting. And so that really leads up to my next question is how, so if someone in my family were experiencing eating disorder challenges or what have you, how would I be able to recognize that? How would I know that, okay, it's time to call Elise and get some help or whomever?
Right. That's a great question. And I think it's so odd that in my practice, I think parents are often, for teens, they're often like not the first ones to know. But what we are going to look for are changes in behavior. Again, let's go back a minute and remember that eating disorders are not about food. The food is the pawn that we're moving around the chess table, but they're not about food. Eating disorders are coping tools. They're coping tools for how we deal with life and stress and feelings of shame and guilt and unworthiness. So that's what we're going to look for. As a parent, you know, that's one thing we look for. We look for mood changes. We look for people with eating disorders often isolate. I mean, there's a behavioral picture that we look for. Food-wise, we often look for people who change their diet drastically and with a rigid way. I think one of the things we do in normal eating is we have flexibility in how we eat. Eating disorders are very rigid. There are a lot of rules and regulations about what, when, where, all the things about how I'm going to eat.
Self-imposed, right? Yes.
Yes. Oh, definitely self-imposed. But if we're going to look for changes, we're going to see a rigidity to how someone eats. Let's bring up veganism. A lot of my clients have as with their eating disorder, they become vegan. It's an external way. It's an outside way of saying, I'm going to restrict my diet. I'm going to eat less, and that's going to make me a better person. I'm going to feel more worthy. It's fine for people to be vegan. It's about being a healthy vegan, a flexible vegan, and that veganism isn't the solution to any emotional turmoil that's underneath. Mm-hmm. So we're going to look for, I have clients who might cut out fat or stop eating desserts. Now, people in our country, we eat a lot of sugar, and we know sugar is an immune suppressant. We know sugar is not the best thing for our body, but the difference between normal eating and rigid disordered eating is that we can have sugar in moderation. That's flexible. We may have less of it, and that's normal and sustainable. Right. But cutting out sugar completely usually is not sustainable.
So putting it into that rigid and flexible container is really, in a sense, exacerbating the problem, right?
Yeah, it makes it seem that if I control
if how I just I did eat, this, right, I'd be okay, right?
Right. And
interesting. So this is such a fascinating subject, and I'm sure our listeners want to learn a lot more. But first, we're going to take a very short break. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio, and we'll be back after these words.
Heart attacks won't wait. If you ever have symptoms of a heart attack, you need to get to the nearest emergency department, preferably one with the technology and expertise to stop a heart attack in its tracks. Health Alliance Hospital, right here on Broadway in Kingston, has expanded cardiac services, including catheterization and electrophysiology. Now, for many people, Health Alliance in Kingston is the closest option to find treatment of clogged arteries, irregular heartbeats, and to limit damage from a heart attack already in process. For the first time, we have these advanced heart health services based right here in Ulster County. This expansion is part of a larger plan to bring advanced cardiac services to Ulster County and the surrounding communities. If you have heart attack symptoms, do not wait. Call 911 and get to the closest emergency department. At Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston, we are ready to see you now. That's Health Alliance Hospital on Broadway in Kingston. WMC Health, advancing care here.
And now, Healthy Ulster continues. This is a weekly presentation of the Ulster County Department of Health on 92.9 and 96.5.
Welcome back. You're listening to Healthy Ulster Radio. Today, we're talking about eating disorders with Elise Simon, who is a registered dietitian nutritionist in private practice. And she's also a dietitian on staff at Bard College. So, Elise, before the break, we were talking about some descriptions of eating disorders, some of the causes. But in the notes, you mentioned a concept called fat talk. Can you tell our listeners what that means in your world?
Sure. Fat talk describes all of the statements that we make every day that reinforce the thin ideal, and they contribute to people's dissatisfaction with their bodies. So it might be like, I feel fat, or do I look fat in this? Or it may even include something like, wow, if I even look at dessert, I gain weight. And then there are statements that are considered fat talk that don't necessarily sound negative at first, like, wow, you look great. Have you lost weight? Or that dress makes you look so slim. This is fat talk. This is the making the ideal of thinness and of what our body looks like the most important thing. The best known environmental contributor to the development of eating disorders is the idealization of thinness, right? I'm going to rephrase that again, that when we use fat talk, we are offering people the option of an eating disorder as a way to feel better about themselves.
To deal with it, right. Wow. And you know, prior to public service and public health, I came from the advertising world. And, you know, it's well known how much money is invested by, you know, the fashion industry and food industry. And then all the social media that, you know, we've heard so much about in terms of its negative effect on, especially with respect to teenage girls, on body image, right? And so, you know, it's conveying this pervasive sense that, hey, you know, if you're not thin and young and rich and beautiful, that somehow you're less, you know, you're worthless or less valued as a person.
Right. And if your picture doesn't get enough likes, you feel worthless.
Mm-hmm. And feeding you more and more information to reinforce that. Well, yeah. And so, you know, when we get into the area, you know, linked to that inexorably is diet, right? Where, you know, the diet industry, which is huge, you know, and the diet, you know, the fad diet or the diet of the day or whatever the next big trend is. So tell us a little bit about
Let's talk about diet. Yeah. That's great. So diet, we all have to know that diet is a four-letter word. And that's how I perceive it. Diets don't work. 95% of all dieters will regain their lost weight in 1 to 5 years. If dieting did work, they wouldn't be making billions of dollars. People would do a diet and then
be done.
Mm-hmm. But diets are things that are unsustainable. Lifestyle changes are more sustainable. 80% of diet program participants, think Weight Watchers, Jenny Craig, reported coping with the stigma they felt about being overweight by guess. What did they do? What was their coping tool to deal with the weight stigma they were feeling? What do you think their coping tool was?
Just to go on the next diet. Right.
That's good. That's part of it, but by eating more.
Eating more, right.
They would binge eat, right? So compulsive overeating is linked to the need to feel like I have to go on a diet, to dieting. If we restrict, dieting is all about restriction.
Mm-hmm.
And what restriction is married to binging. If we restrict something, if we say, I can't ever have ice cream again. And then I'm at a birthday party and they have my favorite flavor ice cream cake. I'm probably going to say something like, wow, I'm just going to have it tonight. I'm never going to have it again because, and I'm being bad. I make a judgment and I'm going to have a giant piece. And I may even go back for seconds or thirds. The door from restriction blasts open and now I'm overeating.
Right. Right. To compensate. So just out of curiosity though, how do you distinguish between like say an individual who says, you know, I just really want to improve my diet by making healthier choices, or I want to improve my BMI by exercising more because I know that if I do some of these things, I can generally lead a healthier lifestyle. How and when does it slip over to the inappropriate response?
Right. Well, I come from the perspective that like I don't use BMI. I don't know that it's helpful to the layperson.
Mm-hmm.
We know if we're overweight, there's a question of what do I want? What do I really want? Do I want to be able to bend down and tie my shoes? Do I want to feel better walking up the stairs? Why do I want this change? And do I think I can make it?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there are people who are going to come in and say, I want to change my diet to be healthier. Great, we can do that. And then we can see, maybe they don't have an eating disorder. We can see how easy is it to make these changes? Or is there an emotional attachment that makes it difficult? Everybody's got vices. Everybody has coping tools.
Mm-hmm.
Food may not be someone's coping tool. Fine. But let's go to the BMI question in there. Someone wants to become of normal weight. So they want to go on a diet and they want to change what they're eating. One of the first questions I would ask is, well, what's the behavior that helped you gain weight in the first place? Oh, I have to look at my behaviors? It's not just manipulating food. How did I gain 30 pounds in 2 years? Did I lose my job? Did I break up with my boyfriend? What happened that my behavior is I'm eating more than my body needs and I lost track of that?
But if I, like, say, for instance, I'll use myself as an example. I've been going to the gym for 15 years, right? And I go 3 or 4 times a week, most times. I mean, I might miss a few here and there. I'm not going there to be a bodybuilder. I'm not going there for, you know, I'm going there because every time I go there, I feel really good afterwards. And I feel like I've reduced my stress. I feel like I sleep better. I feel like I just overall am in a much better place. How do I know that that's not feeding some other unknown?
Great, because you what you said was you feel good after you exercise, right? Mm-hmm. It helps you manage your stress, mm-hmm. and that's worth it. That's worth for you. You're saying that's really worth it. I feel really good, and I can go back to my day or my week with less stress. There's a proven benefit, and you've made it a priority. I think we have to look at times when we're exercising. Let's say someone is overweight and they are on their Stairmaster the whole time and they hate exercise because maybe what they're thinking is, oh my gosh, I got to get rid of this weight. I hate myself. I'm so fat. I wish I didn't eat that. There's a running monologue of hate words, of self-disgust. Mm-hmm. That's when exercise isn't helpful. It's also not helpful when exercise is the way to purge calories. I have lots of clients who are compulsive exercisers, meaning they exercise one, more than is good for their body, and two, with an ulterior motive of exercising away any of the food that the nourishment they're eating. That's not helpful. They're damaging their body because it makes them feel better in the moment.
Or also maybe saying, hey, I can eat as much as I want and all the sugar I want, whatever, because I'm exercising and I'm just washing it away, sort of, or not. Am I in the wrong chapter?
No, you're on the right chapter. Yes.
Mm-hmm. So, Elise, we know that when people have challenges, they'd really like to hear what they can do to prevent a situation like that, but also what the options are for mitigating that and treating that. Can you talk about that?
Yes. So the first thing that everybody can do is swear off fat talk. We have to watch our language. We have to watch what kind of words we put out in this world, that we want to say things that are positive about our bodies and never say negative talk about our own bodies or anyone else's. We also want to swear off dieting. In a large study of teenagers, dieting was the most important predictor of developing an eating disorder. Like, if that's not proof, I don't know what is. So if we can talk about ourselves in positive ways and we can stop commenting on anyone else's body, that's a great step. Now, if we're talking about treatment, there are different levels. I'm an outpatient dietitian. I'm a great first tier of someone needs help. They just want to talk about their food. They want to talk about an eating disorder that they might be involved in. They come to me. There are also higher levels of partial programs or inpatient hospital programs. There's residential treatment. A lot of it is online now.
And it's not a one size fits all solution of any, right? It's something that it really needs to be customized to an individual, right?
And the customization is partially what level of care is going to support the person where they are at.
Mm-hmm. Elise, this is such a fascinating topic, and I definitely want to have you back because it's a really rich topic. But as we are running out of time, can you tell our listeners where they can go for more information and also how to reach you, more importantly?
Sure. First place I'd go to is the National Eating Disorder Association. It's a great, NEDA is a wonderful organization all devoted to eating disorders. They have terrific links. You can find that online. My website is elisesimonrd.com. And then I want to give a plug for Mental Health Association of Ulster County. We have an eating disorder coalition. And there's a conference on December 3rd. Every year we do a conference at the Best Western. And this one is called Eating Disorders in a Changing World, Where Do We Go From Here? So MHA often has groups too that are free, all about eating disorders.
So that's wonderful. So this is really great, Elise. Thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge with us. It's really, really terrific, and we will definitely have you back. That's all the time we have for today. Tune in next week for more great information that you can use to keep yourself, your family, and our community healthy and strong. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Healthy Ulster Radio Show from the Ulster County Department of Health. This program is a weekly community affairs presentation sponsored by the Emergency Department at Health Alliance Hospital in Kingston, a member of WMC Health. Thanks for listening, and be sure to join us for another edition of the Healthy Ulster Radio Show next weekend.